people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ain't ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They learn our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and fought and died for thee. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warning. And you run down my country, man. You walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. You can reach us either way. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you may be listening this morning in the European heartland. And this is, of course, from the anti-free speech Yellow Vests Canada Exposed, I guess that's what they are. And anyway, what's on their mind right now is are some posters in the east end of Toronto. And these posters say, let us see, they say God keep our land, and they have the red end sign and the flag of the people of Quebec, and this says the neo-Nazi Canadian Nationalist Party has put up stickers. This one at the corner of Brooklawn and Kingston Road. Please remove or cover if it's safe to do so. Talk about interfering people. And these are the professional anti-racists. They go by different names, but this is one branch of them called the Yellow Vest Canada Exposed. Typical of the censorship that they're involved with. All sorts of interesting things. There's a French doctor by the name of Bernard-Henri Lévy. And
has made some interesting comments about the reaction in France to the coronavirus. He wrote a piece in the one of the French newspapers quite recently, saying that France should also be concerned about the fact that the coronavirus is also hitting the Third World. And this was published in the French publication, a journal called Paris Match. Here's some interesting things that he had to say. His first observation is that our fixation on the virus has become more pathological than the virus. En français, ce virus qui nous fout. This virus makes us crazy, or is driving us crazy. And I've commented on this before, but I've certainly seen examples of that here in Canada. It is absolutely undermining the ability of some people to think. And the medical profession, Mr. Levy blames the collective hype worsened by cable news channels and social media that in hammering day after day the numbers of those in intensive care, the dying and the dead, thrust us into a parallel universe where no other information existed and to the letter, virtually driving us mad. And you've probably seen this on CNN or CBC in Canada, that there are times when there is almost nothing other than COVID virus. Well, except more recently, Black Lives Matter and the boo-hoo-hooing of various minorities, usually blacks or Native Indians, about how unfair the system is to them and how they are victims of systemic racism. This, though, from a government and an establishment that absolutely bends itself, bends over backwards, bends itself into a pretzel to give special advantage to visible minorities, particularly Native Indians and blacks. It is systemically racist, but not in the way they mean. But the mania in the last 100 days or so about COVID virus has ever driven some people, in my opinion, quite literally crazy. Suspended all judgment. Well, let's go back to what this fellow Bernard-Henri Lévy has to say. The medical profession comes in for harsh criticism for, quote, abuse of knowledge, for feeding too easily into the fears of the population. First off, he says, the doctors often do not have any more information than the rest of us, and the blind trust that is invested in them is something absurd. And I think a lot of people have said that especially in Canada, watching the ever-changing assessment or the ever-changing story about the COVID virus, or as it was called then, the coronavirus. First beginning with no big deal, it can't really be transmitted from human to human, and definitely no travel ban on with China, because of course that would be racist, that would be stigmatizing the Chinese. Stigmatizing is supposedly a bad word. I prefer a different word. Correctly identify. Do I stigmatize a person who is reeling down the street, bouncing from side to side and off buildings, staggering, mumbling, and vomiting? Do I stigmatize him by calling him a drunk? No, that is an accurate description. That's what he is. But anyway, the Canadian party line from doctors, in fact from the the head of the medical profession, or I should say the Canada's chief medical officer, this mysterious China woman, Theresa Tam, has changed many times, with the result, I think, that you could quite rightly say, they may not know a whole lot more than the rest of us. And what they say with such great certainty today may be the opposite of what they'll say with equal certainty tomorrow. Now, if this was just a philosophical discussion, it wouldn't much matter. Unfortunately, what they say immediately, equally weak or ignorant or foolish politicians, becomes things that have to be imposed upon us. Mr. Louis, who provides a long list of expert assertions about the coronavirus and its transmission that have proved wrong since the outset of the pandemic. The most pernicious of these myths may be the idea that children must be kept out of school, which has been done in many, many Western countries, but was not done in Taiwan, with the result that hundreds of thousands of school children died. No, not at all. In fact, the young seem to be uniquely not susceptible to this coronavirus flu. So why isolate them? Well, that the isolation and closing down schools was absolutely mainstream. It's in most Western countries, with terrible effects. Mr. Levy ridicules ecologists who celebrate the silver lining of the pandemic as carbon emissions plummet and nature invades urban spaces, with deer sightings even in the Champs-Élysées in downtown Paris. He dismisses the nonsense that the virus is talking to us, that it has a message to deliver about how mankind has been treating the planet. The coronavirus, he writes, is more an example of nature's violence against man than the other way around. And I've seen that nonsense that he criticizes repeated many times by radical environmentalists. They're glad of the shutdowns. They're glad of the fact there's far fewer trips being made by the automobile, there's less carbon dioxide being put into the atmosphere. Not that necessarily is a good thing. Carbon dioxide is one of the essential foods for plants. Mr. Levy says not this catastrophic, if not apocalyptic, interruption of activity with incalculable consequences. We should not have allowed ourselves to be intimidated by this false debate of lives versus the economy, but should have compared the cost in lives of the virus spread against the glaciation caused by the self-inflicted coma on an almost entire planet turned into a laboratory for radical political experiment. I just want to read the conclusion of that again, because I think that's bang on. The hysterical reaction to the coronavirus has created what he calls a self-inflicted coma on an almost entire planet turned into a laboratory for radical political experiment. And that's what's going on, radical political experiments. Ordering people around. You've got to line up for this, you've got to line up for that. Only two people allowed in a huge cavernous, drugstore at a time. The rest of us have to stand outside impatiently like sheep, wait our turn. And few people question, but why only two? Social distancing. Well, yeah, even if you buy into 6 feet distance, it's easy for adults to shop and keep 6 feet away from one another, and especially these huge places. The rules are arbitrary but and adamantly enforced. And then he concludes, but you don't have to look far to see the toll. In May alone, the province of British Columbia experienced a record 270 deaths from drug overdoses, surpassing in 1 month the province's total of COVID-19 deaths since the pandemic began in January. So in May, in one province, there were more deaths from drug overdoses than the entire sum of deaths from coronavirus. And yet we've shut down, or virtually shut down, the economy. There's something mad about this. I came back to Ontario today from a great meeting last night in Edmonton, Alberta. And as usual, I preach the gospel along the way. No, maybe not that gospel. I preach my cynicism and skepticism about a lot of what's going on with the coronavirus. So as I enter the plane, because I'm a frequent flyer, and sometimes the crew notices this, I was greeted and they thanked me for my patronage, etc., which is all very pleasant and nice. And said something like they were hoping I was having a good day. Well, I said, no, I'm not having a good day. I detest lineups, and I would feel a lot more welcome if you served, as usual, tea and coffee and soft drinks on the plane. And I went on to say, we're told that there will be a new normal. And I said, there's a very good chance that many people have been so traumatized by the propaganda, and I use that term, about the coronavirus, that they will not fly again. Or maybe to be less harsh about it, may not fly for many years. Many people were scared after 9/11, and there was a certain segment of the flying public that vowed they would never fly again because they were afraid of Muslim terrorists hijacking the plane or blowing it up or something along those lines. I always felt that was a relatively minor risk, one I was prepared to take. But there were people who did not, that's 19 years ago. There were a few who probably never flew again, a larger number that took a good number of years to overcome the fear. But that was small potatoes compared to the fear of coronavirus, which is the campaign, the propaganda campaign has gone on a lot longer than the publicity over what happened on 9/11. People also see it as more personal. I could get this coronavirus anywhere, not just on a plane. It's not just a matter of, well, I better keep off planes because I could be, could be hijacked. No, I could get this coronavirus everywhere. We'd be told we've got to be suspicious of everybody, right? Because otherwise, anybody could have it, even though they don't know they have it. That's why we're being urged to wear masks. A few months ago, we were told masks didn't do much good. Now it's being made mandatory in some places. It is in the state of Washington. I understand it's being made mandatory in Michigan. And the madness leads to a complete loss of freedom. As I was coming back to my home from the airport, I was listening to talk radio. That's CFRB 1010 or 1010 talk radio, 1010 on the AM dial. And I'm not sure who the person was, but he was the regular host at the 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, or 5 o'clock to 5:45 segment. And the big topic was a big debate as to whether wearing pet masks indoors like in stores or other places, should be made mandatory. And the male host and some female he was talking with were both outdoing each other. Well, yes, and they were mocking several callers who had tried to get through and discuss it and who had raised the questions about individual freedom. And he was mocking them and saying he didn't even want to hear them, that they were ignorant. And the minute somebody starts talking about this is how Hitler began, now I've got to agree, this had nothing to do with Adolf Hitler. But there are some people, I'd say ill-informed people, who think that the strongest point they can make is to compare something to National Socialism, or they'll say Nazis. So these are the smoking Nazis they will talk about. Those are the people who were very strong a few years ago, but want to ban cigarettes from all sorts of places. Or there's the comment about feminazis. These are, you know, the radical feminists that are man-haters and imposing their man-hating agenda on other people. I do not agree with using terms like that. It's inaccurate, for one thing. But for some people, the worst thing that you can possibly, the worst insult is to compare somebody or something to the National Socialists. I think National Socialism was a grand experiment. It did a lot of good for Germany. Anyway, all that aside. This fellow said, the minute they start, anybody starts talking about these impositions being how Hitler started out and it's all going to lead to dictatorship, we won't even listen to them. And I was like, Adam, I thought, wait a sec. You know, whatever happened to genuine discussion and debate, which means hearing views you don't agree with? Well, anyway, basically these two people, for the better part of 45 minutes, preached and preached and preached. How could anybody be opposed to wearing a little piece of cloth? It's going to save lives, it's protecting people, and it's going to protect you too, which is probably not true exactly. I will discuss masks probably a little bit more another night this week. But the point was, how could anybody be so selfish? And why do people want to go against intelligent directions? Well, I can think of a number of reasons. Number one, we were told just a few months ago masks didn't do any good. Well, we were actually told they stigmatized people, whatever that meant, but they didn't do any good. Well, I'm not saying necessarily that they were right with that. I'm persuaded that there may be some cases where a mask may be worthwhile. But I really resent the imposition of this as a requirement. And it is, of course, now on Canadian Airlines. I was picked up by a cab at the airport, and I was told I had to put a mask on. I said, I guess you don't want my business too much, do you? And I said, well, I will do it this time, because I need the ride. But I will do everything possible to avoid ever taking one of your cabs again. And as soon as we pulled away from the airport, East Indian cab driver told me, you can take your mask off if you want. We only had to do it for that guy back there because he's a government inspector. Well, okay, maybe if I'd been told that from the beginning, I would have been less angry. But I mean, I'm still angry at the imposition. These brazen politicians forcing us to do things. But these two talk chatterboxes on the talk radio in the 5 o'clock to quarter to six slot were outdoing each other with the politicians have to have more courage. Yeah, under Section 122, apparently, of the Health Act, the local mayors have, in consultation with the local chief medical officer of health, have the right to impose conditions or restrictions, including requiring you to wear a mask. Indoors, that is when you in public indoors, like when you go shopping in a supermarket. And already some supermarkets are requiring it, and where they do, I walk away, Renee. No, I'm not doing it. I have other places where masks are not required, where you can buy good food. And I think it is so important that people resist. Now, The mayors are saying that the Premier of Ontario should impose mask restrictions, and the Premier of the province says, well, the mayors already have that power if they want to use it. The thing is, of course, I think they're afraid of political repercussions, which tells you that despite the outright censorship of dissenting opinions, 1010 Talk Radio knows darn well a lot of people have their backs up about this. They don't want to be bossed around. They don't want to stick that piece of cloth or mask on their faces for a whole bunch of good reasons. And I've talked to people who have to wear the masks in the airline industry, and a number of these people, when they don't think anybody else is listening to the conversation, say, it's very hard on me wearing this thing all day long. I have trouble breathing through it. One woman told me, I have asthma. But the bosses don't care. I have to wear this. Yes, and I understand that. It's their job. I would, of course, be far happier if I thought the trade unions were digging their heels in. But as a good supporter of mine in Edmonton told me last night, no, the unions are more complicit in this than anything else. This is the madness that Bernard Lévy was referring to. People have lost their sense of proportion. And many people, including these chattering hosts, I guess you'd call them, on the talk radio, we're prepared to see restrictions and people being ordered to wear masks. So far in Ontario, not too many politicians have gone that far. And business has been like this too. They like the government to impose it because they would prefer as much as possible to avoid the responsibility themselves. But they're quite happy to bully people around. It's just who's going to take responsibility for it? Well, there's an interesting case, which I think I can dig out for you, that occurred down in Kingston, Ontario. The past few days, and there's been quite an outbreak of coronavirus. All traceable back to, get this, you will not believe it. Maybe you will believe it. I'm sure you will, actually. All traceable back to a nail salon. And there have been quite a number of cases that are traceable back to that nail salon. Here is the story. Kingston, that's a small city on Lake Ontario. On Lake Ontario called Kingston. Kingston issues face masks order. 500 salon customers asked to quarantine after COVID-19 outbreak. That doesn't mean 19 got it. I mean, 500 got it. Hundreds of people lined up to be tested for COVID-19 in Kingston, Ontario on Friday after a local outbreak at a mall nail salon showed how quickly the virus can spread. Kieran Moore, Medical Officer of Health for Kingston and surrounding communities, is asking the 500 customers who visited Bin's Nail and Spa since it reopened 2 weeks ago to quarantine themselves for 14 days and watch for any symptoms of the coronavirus. Public health declared an outbreak at the salon on Thursday and closed it until further notice. Now, Bin's, B-I-N-H. Now, I'm a linguist, and I'll let you in on something. If you haven't already figured it out, that's Vietnamese. And some of these Vietnamese salons are notorious before coronavirus, for spreading hepatitis, because a lot of Orientals have hepatitis. And you know, when you are giving a person a manicure, it's not that unusual to break the skin, and if the person doing it has a broken skin as well, they can infect people with hepatitis. But this is not about hepatitis. The people who have tested positive include 6 employees of Bin's Nail, healthcare workers, and correctional officers who were customers of the salon. So 6 of the workers. So it seems that they were spreading. Well, how did this happen? Dr. Moore issued a public health order on Friday, making face masks mandatory in all indoor public places in Kingston region, including grocery stores, restaurants, hair and nail salons, and on public transit. Businesses can be fined up to $5,000 a day for ignoring the order. I mean, that is really draconian. So I would avoid the Kingston region. The move on Friday to make masks mandatory is a necessary precaution, says Dr. Moore. Bin's Nail salon staff wore face masks after reopening on June 12th, but many customers did not. As well, he added, the nail salon was not properly cleaning equipment. At this stage, it's not known how the virus got into the salon, etc., etc. But bingo, you know, that little detail. Of course, we mustn't question the ethnicity or the cleanliness of any people. We should, but we're not supposed to. In other words, the spa was not properly cleaning the equipment. And that may well be how the virus got in there and spread. So what does the chief medical officer of health do? Punish everybody in Kingston. You've got to wear face masks in any public indoor place and public transportation. People should push back. They should. Well, former Prime Minister of our country, Brian Mulroney. Now, here is I originally thought it was an ad, but it's something called the Zero with a Slash Through It Canada Project. Help Zero Canada. Well, this is apparently a project of the Globe and Mail. As part of the Zero Canada Project, the Globe and Mail asked some prominent Canadians to share their thoughts on the current crisis and the path forward for Canada. Now, some of what the former Conservative Prime Minister Brian Mulroney has to say here is sensible enough. Complete dismantling of interprovincial trade barriers. Okay, I can agree with that. He has in mind a powerful assertion of sovereignty over our north with a strong military, cybersecurity, education and health facility presence, accompanied by a major infrastructure program to ensure growth and prosperity. Yes, and this notion of actually securing Arctic sovereignty goes back to the 1950s with former Conservative Prime Minister John Diefenbaker. Among other things, Canada is an Arctic nation, and we should assert our sovereignty. Anyway, all that's good. I'm not saying everything in Mulroney's piece is not, but here we are. Dramatic increase in our immigration over time to an objective of 75 million people so that we can achieve our full potential. So we will achieve our full potential when we have a population of 75 million people. For better or for worse, we fought World War II with a population of 18 million.
and have the fifth largest navy in the world. No, in my opinion, endless growth is should not be a goal in itself. But how are we going to achieve this this goal of 75 million population? Well, the normal way since time immemorial is, this is that special time when we have a talk with the young folks. yeah, that's right. Natural reproduction. Well, why must we immediately slide past that as if it's a dirty topic and talk about immigration? That's very interesting. That's the way populations normally expanded.
There had to be an average of slightly more than 2.1 children per woman of childbearing age. Up until very recently, most people in Canada had large families, up until the 70s. Three, four, five children was not at all unusual. And then we began to fall below the replacement level, which is 2.1, or roughly two children per woman of childbearing age. Well, why not address that? No. Now, he doesn't say this, but where is our immigration coming from? Well, for the last 40 years, it has overwhelmingly come from the third world. It's now about 85% of each year's intake is from the third world. In 1961, the non-white population of Canada, excluding Native Indians, was less than 1%. Today, it's 22%. And every prediction based on actually older immigration numbers, the immigration numbers have been boosted repeatedly under the Liberal government. But on the basis of old predictions, which are conservative, the European founding settler people will be a minority by 2050, though actually probably a few years before that. Mulroney's immigration policy, which actually is the same as our present Prime Minister's immigration policy, involves the cold-blooded racial replacement of the founding settler people of this country. Why do you hate us so much? And I can't give you an answer on behalf of Brian Mulroney as to why he wants our people, I'd say his people, to be replaced. It may be a ridiculous belief that people are people. We're all basically economic units. It doesn't matter what your race is, what your religion is, you're a producer or a consumer, or hopefully both. And so it's all numbers. It doesn't matter who you are. That might be the most benign explanation. There are others. Anyway, that's how we're going to make a great country. A second thing was this. And I found this equally problematic. Now, I don't know if he listed his, it's about a dozen things that he suggests, if these are in order of importance. But it's interesting that among the top four was the immigration, actually among the top three. Number two, greater fairness and opportunity for our Black, Indigenous, and people of color together with a national commitment to the eradication of systemic racism and anti-Semitism in Canada. Okay, greater fairness and opportunities for our Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Okay, yeah, I think we should be fair to everybody. And a national commitment to the eradication of systemic racism. Whoa! You were Prime Minister of the country for 8 years. So you are admitting that you presided over systemic racism? And you did nothing about it?
Well, what are you pleading guilty to? What is it you want? You have the power. So are you saying you presided over systemic racism and you never did anything about it? That's grotesque. They should be challenged on this. Oh, yes. And all of this with a view to the eradication of systemic racism and anti-Semitism in Canada. Anti-Semitism in Canada. We're going to eradicate. Well, actually, criticism of Jews is a political and or a religious position. Anti-Semitism is defined so broadly that it is any criticism of Jews. Well, I don't believe any group should be immune to criticism. And why would we want to eliminate anti-Semitism? Well, how is this even a national priority? What is he talking about? Are there crowds rampaging through the streets, beating up Jews right, left, and center, smashing Jewish businesses? Are Jews excluded from the judiciary? Well, wait a sec. Under Paul Martin, at one point, four of the nine Supreme Court justices were Jews. Jews constitute a little under 1% of the population. What is he talking about? This is the most shameless guilt-mongering or stupidity. Anyway, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the funny side of me. I'm going to take my musical break right now. I'm going to play the fellow I played recently. I really like his music. He's had a troubled youth, a promise with alcohol. I think he even did a bit of time in prison. But he embraced the Lord, and this is Randy Travis, and I love this ballad of his. I'll play this and a few more. Randy Travis, and this is Four Wooden Crosses.
A farmer and a teacher, a hooker and a preacher, riding on a midnight bus bound for Mexico. One was headed for vacation, one for higher education, and two of them were searching for lost souls. That driver never ever saw the stop sign. And 18-wheelers can't stop on a dime. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That farmer left to harvest a home and 80 acres, the faith and love for growing things in his young son's heart. And that teacher left her wisdom in the minds of lots of children, and did her best to give them all a better start. And that preacher whispered, "Can't you see the promised land?" as he lay his blood-stained Bible in that hooker's hand. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That's the story that our preacher told last Sunday, as he held that blood-stained Bible up for all of us to see. Bless the farmer and the teacher and the preacher. I gave this Bible to my mama, who read it to me. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. why there's not four of them. Now I guess we know it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. This song doesn't mind, neither do me and you. We're doing just fair, no matter what we try. We go round and round, getting no place. It's bringing me pain. This song doesn't rhyme. This song doesn't rhyme. Or I wish it could. I'm losing my This is the last waltz. This song doesn't rhyme. There once was a time when everything rhymed. We felt so fine, but not anymore. This song doing just there. No matter what we try, we go round and round, getting no place. And it's bringing me pain. This song doesn't rhyme.
That's Randy Travis Scott. It's plays a lot of tunes by Randy. A great balladeer. Hope you like the Randy Travis's music.
Well, there's my easy chair. Just sitting there. I've spent a lot of time thinking of this perfect love. Oh, how I love that old picture on the wall of you and me and the kids. My most favorite times in life I've spent right here where we live. There's no place like home. There's no
There's no place
the bedroom. I smell perfume, my favorite kind you wore, and it brings back memories of all those nights behind our bedroom door. And the saddest thing I think I've ever seen was my closet all cleaned out. It's sad to think that one must leave, 'cause we can't work things out. There's no place like home. There's no
great singer. Randy Travis, this is Paul Throne. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. I start off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Throne, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and Irish green or freedom's foam. The maple leaf forever, the maple leaf our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless.